I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move
Good day, everybody, and welcome to I Like To Movie Movie. My name is Dan Scully.
What's up? I'm Steven.
That was tough, dude. You're a tough guy. Steven's been doing push-ups in the Zoom for like the last 20 minutes.
I'm getting real hard today for a great movie about video games.
That's right. Today we are talking about the new movie Tetris, and then later on in the episode we are going to be counting down our five favorite video games or favorite movies based on video games, about video games, or inspired by video games. If we wanted to make that pool as wide as possible.
Yeah,
if it's video game tangentially related, that's the that. And it was very difficult for me to do this introduction and not say welcome to Hot Property, which brings me to some house cleaning. We do have another housekeeping. Sorry, we do have another podcast called Hot Property, which you can find at Hot Property Pod on all of the things. And of course, you can find I Like To Movie Movie everywhere you get podcasts at Movie Movie Cast. Everywhere. That's where you find it. So look no further for audio entertainment about video entertainment.
What would you find if you did look further? Is my question.
Well, I often think about things like, so Bed Bath & Beyond just went out of business, and the Beyond would be what you would look at if you looked further. But I've been to Bed Bath & Beyond, and only Bed and Bath were ever represented. There was no Beyond.
Well, the Beyond is behind the fake towels that they put up.
I mean, I know that in the movie Click, the Beyond was where Christopher Walken had magical remote controls.
Well, there you go. That's the Beyond, because you remember that from the movie, so they're in the movie as well. They star in the movie, Bed Bath & Beyond does.
Here's the thing. I'm no scientist, but I think Click might be fake.
What I'm saying is that it has hit another form of media, so that Bed Bath & Beyond being in the movie is the Beyond, because they're no longer a department store. They're beyond the department store. Now they're in the theater.
Fair enough. I'm into it. I dig it. I like that read. I want to shout out before we start talking about Tetris. Everyone who listens to this show knows that I am a movie guy, and it's very rare that I get a TV show in me. And I chip away at shows here and there, but I've been using my daily trip to the gym to catch up on TV shows that I've been missing. And I just finished Beef, which is on Netflix. It's an A24 show. And I cannot recommend it highly enough. It is absolutely brilliant. It's two people that meet in a small road rage incident that slowly but surely spirals out of control. But it's fueled by the fact that, so Steven Yeun is the one guy, and he is struggling in life. He's trying to build a construction company, and he just doesn't have a lot of money, doesn't have a lot of opportunity, and therefore is feeling stressed. Ali Wong's character, he loses a lot of Bitcoin. Ali Wong's character is quite well off, but the stresses that come with that as she's trying to sell the business that she built. And they're both remarkably similar, but from different sides of the tracks, as it were. And the way that this show escalates is, there were multiple times where I out loud while on the elliptical at the gym went, they're going to kill each other, because I was just so shocked by what was going on. And the final episode is just I was talking to one of my buddies. He didn't realize that the 10th episode was the last episode. So he thought the end of episode 9 was the series finale. And what's so good about this show is the end of episode 9 really could function as a clever and complete finale for the show. But episode 10 is a home run. And I just, I don't binge a whole lot, but yesterday I watched four episodes back to back to back because I just had to finish it. I had to know. So any listeners that are looking for a show, Beef is on Netflix, and I highly recommend that.
I can't. Well, I mean, at first I thought I couldn't believe that you watched another show that was not on the list of recommendations that I've been giving you since the dawn of our friendship. And then I remembered just now that that isn't an A24 show, and that's why it jumped the line. So now that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Also, it was because of you that I started and finished Breaking Bad, and that was a pretty tall ask. So I thank you for that. I know that was a decade ago.
So I get one every decade, right?
Well, and then I know that the spinoff show of Breaking Bad has also now finished. So I really do need to catch up. But that's probably coming up soon. You didn't see Better Call Saul?
No.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you recommended Barry to me, but I watched the first episode of Barry at the gym today.
I haven't seen it yet. Don't say anything.
Well, so far, thumbs up. It's pretty great.
Nice.
Yeah. Bill Hader. What a guy.
Fuck, what was the show that I was watching that I wanted? Oh, that comes later. Never mind. Save it for later.
Have you watched anything movie-wise lately that you would like to shout out?
Yeah, I was watching this movie called Tetris for this podcast that I have to do.
That you have to do.
That I thought I didn't do by contract.
That you're trapped doing.
By Russian contract.
What's going to happen here in about 15 seconds, Steven's mic is going to air quotes, stop working, and then we're going to have to stop doing this show. It's just...
Steven's mic is going to explode in his face.
Now that I am recording the video, so if that happens, we don't typically release the video. I will release that video because we're going to want that for posterity. But we can actually get right into it if you want to get into Tetris.
It'll just do that thing that it does in the movies where it just goes to static.
Yeah.
And you won't actually see anything happen. You're like, oh my God.
When the movie logo comes up and it's like, we're experiencing technical difficulties. That kind of thing.
I liked how, let's just get into it. I liked how every kind of almost every part of the score was a Tetris theme in a different way.
Yeah, that was very cool. I feel like that's essential if you're making a movie about Tetris, because that's like probably the biggest piece of iconography about Tetris is that theme. Everyone knows it. Everyone recognizes it.
Besides the tall block.
Well, the meme of Tetris is you want the tall block, and you're building up, waiting for that tall block, and it never comes.
I like that Taron Egerton played the square, though. The square block is my favorite block.
Old reliable.
Yeah, and you had that Russian dude who looks like Ike Barinholtz.
Yeah.
He played the T block.
Yeah.
The tall block was that British dude.
Maxwell. That family of men who dye their hair embarrassingly black.
Yeah, he also looks like was it Tim Roth that played Winston Churchill? No, Gary Oldman.
Oh, Gary Oldman, yeah. And I thought
he was at a Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill cosplay competition.
And he did the voice, too. He very much had the Gary Oldman voice. I thought his son, Kevin Maxwell, that's Mr. Maxwell to you, whatever, Kevin. He reminded me of, what's his name? Rob Stark from Game of Thrones a little bit. Yeah. But just like much more sniveling and bitchy.
I was going to say Wes Bentley.
Yeah, actually, if the two of them had a baby.
In a long, long time.
What has Wes Bentley been up to?
I think he's on some vampire shit now, because he looks like a vampire.
Yeah, he is a little bit vampire-y.
Everybody's on a vampire show these days now. You know,
yeah, that's true.
The CW is basically just like the VW, the vampire.
Vampire Weekly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is wild. That was like... that's probably been going since like Twilight is really where like teen vampires made their 2000s resurgence. And now it's like,
vampire represents horniness, and that's why teens love it so much, you know.
And then there's Vampire Chronicles and True Blood and Vampire Weekend and just a whole bunch of everything is vampire-y.
True Blood was basically as Skinamax as HBO could get in their 9 o'clock slot.
That show was so good until it wasn't.
Yeah.
It just did really. That's a show that I actually stopped watching. I didn't finish.
Me too. But it gave us Skarsgård, and for that I am eternally grateful.
Yes. Yes. So did you like Tetris?
I loved it. I really liked it a lot. It was a great story. It was fun. It was also intense, and it was kind of like gave a different insight to the Iron Curtain that you don't normally see, involving intellectual property and how a capitalist and communistic society would trade within each other, and which was interesting in a lot of ways and a variety of reasons, especially with the whole contracts and who owns what and people going through proxies, things like that. It was all very, very cool to see. And I'm all about world building, and they were able to a world that people may not necessarily know a lot about for us in a sense where it makes sense to us. And that's I thought that was really cool.
It reminded me.
I love the way they. Sorry, my last point is I love the way that they incorporated the 8-bit look into reality. Like a lot of the transitions would swipe down from falling bricks 8-bit. There's a really great scene that we'll get into later where there's a car chase, and every time there's an impact, there's an 8-bit explosion, and just the transition, even the acts are separated into level 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, player 1, player 2.
Yeah, it was really creative. It was a really creative use of 8-bit, and it wasn't they're making it look like Tetris. They made it look like an actual video game, which I thought was cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I it reminded me, because I'm a pretty big sucker for movies that like Social Network, The Big Short, Moneyball, as I've been texting you about, the Bald Dennis movie, Blackberry.
Oh my which god! Sort of one more goddamn word about the Bald Dennis movie. We're not watching that for the podcast, by the way.
You got to see it.
You ruined it for me. I'll never see it now. I will never fucking watch that movie.
If you liked Tetris, you will like that as well. But it reminded me of that sort of movie where it's like we take a piece of unknown history about something that everybody knows and loves and kind of explain. Like the cool thing about Moneyball is that's a movie about math, but I don't think of it as a movie about math.
Yeah.
Social Network has a movie. It's got a lot of programming talk in it, and I don't know jack shit about coding a goddamn thing. And so to be able to take all of the ownership rights and all the contracts that they have in the world of Tetris and sort of make it palatable and make it understandable, the way The Big Short made the housing crisis, something that I can understand, but it did it without resorting to layman's terms. Like it doesn't talk down to the audience in making it sound too complicated, but it also doesn't handhold in a way where they're explaining to you literally what's happening. And I think that's a tough line to walk. And I think Tetris did it remarkably well. And like you said, the immediate post Cold War history of it is something that of course exists. I remember on my Game Boy as a kid, which was packaged with Tetris, it says copyright, Alexei, was it Pajnatov or something? And I understood that to be a Russian name. I understood it to be a Russian game, but it never occurred to me, I am in America playing on a Japanese console, playing a game that is steeped in Russian imagery, is clearly made by Russians. I didn't know to know that that is three different types of oil and water. Yeah. And I never really thought that that was a thing until sitting down to see this movie. And of course it was. Of course it was a thing. And so what a fascinating history.
It really was, and I really just think that the casting was really great as well, as far as that goes, because it did, except for the guy who played Gorbachev was not very good.
He was only just in it for a second or two, but he didn't feel like Gorby to me. But if you slap that little birthmark that everyone discovered he had when he went bald... Jim Gaffigan has a great joke about that. He's like, imagine you start going bald, you're like, god damn it, I'm going bald, could this be any worse? And it's like, oh, I got that thing on my head. God damn it,
I forgot what my point was going to be, but anyway, the pacing of the movie was really good, because it didn't, there was really no moment where I was like, all right, let me look at my phone while I watch. And that's kind of like how I judge movies these days, where it's like, am I instinctively reaching, which is terrible, and this, yeah, this is what I need to talk to my therapist about, but instinctively reaching for my phone to check something else, and this held my interest the whole time. And I, it was really good. I loved it a lot. Taron Egerton's accent kind of got a little intense at times, and then like backed off. It was a little inconsistent for me, but
I think generally speaking, though, he is one of the better actors at hiding his accent.
Yeah,
and I would agree that I would plainly state that I think he's good at hiding his accent. He's not always good at hiding the fact that he has an accent, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, like his New York accent, like when he got New York, he got very New York indeed.
Yeah. Well, like, that's my point. Is like, yeah, listening to him, I wouldn't go, oh, that's an Englishman, but I also wouldn't go, that's a New Yorker.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't think his accent's necessarily bad, but I do think watching him, I go, I'm pretty sure that's not how he actually talks. You know, like, yeah, that, like when you, like, Jenna always points it out, like when you look at, like House MD, he's a great example of a guy who's good at hiding the fact that he has an English accent, but when he talks very particular, and he's swallowing every vowel that he has to make sure that you can, yeah, you know, and so you can tell that he's doing something. And I think that, Edgerton's, ability to do that's a little softer edged, but you still can tell that he is not speaking in his normal language, but or his normal accent. That said, his character in this movie is sort of a character. Like, yeah, he's such a salesman-y kind of guy, like a salesman with a heart of gold kind of guy, that I think he plays that so well that any weird tics about the way he behaves can be filed under the fact that, like, this guy is a cartoon man who, you know, is just unlike anybody else in the room, no matter what room he's,
yeah,
in.
And there was a definite point where I was like screaming at the TV. I was like, every decision you're making is the wrong one.
Yeah.
Like, please stop what you're doing. He and Alexi wanted, or he was like at Alexi's house, which is, you're not supposed to be doing that. Like, you're not supposed to.
And he just shows up.
You're not supposed to have guests if you're, or tourists as guests in Russia. You're not supposed to be seen outside with a tourist at all, I guess. And like, Taron Egerton's character was like, let's go out clubbing. And Alexi's like, yeah, that's a good idea, because we're not in the middle of a fucking, like, revolution.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'll be great.
Although I gotta say, when they went out to the club, and Taron, we keep calling him Taron Egerton's character, we'll call him by his name, Hank.
Hank, because I couldn't remember what it was.
But it's not Hank.
It's Hank.
Hank Rogers. I love when he was blown away that everybody knew the lyrics to The Final Countdown. He's like, yeah, everyone knows the words. Everyone knows the words. Like,
that was really
what a great moment.
Yeah, I was kind of like, that was when I was like cheering a little bit for them, and then they cut to what turned out to be a different scene. But I was like, oh man, now the whole rave is gonna get put out because Taron couldn't, or Hank couldn't fucking keep it cool, keep it quiet.
One of the things I liked about that scene, though, is like my image of Russia consists of literally just the video game Tetris, Rocky IV, and just this idea that like everybody lives in a cold gray box and they're not allowed to leave. And so it never occurred to me to think like, oh yeah, at the height of, you know, like the fall of the Soviet Union, kind of that era, there probably were plenty of people who were young, I don't want to say rebels, but like just like young people who obviously don't stand for the regime, who would go out clubbing and say screw the rules and do that, because that element exists everywhere. And I never once gave consideration to that existing in that era of Russia, when of course it did. And so seeing that on screen and seeing this dance club that felt like, you know, felt American in a lot of ways, is was very, very cool to see.
Well, we're also the generation of like the Russians were always the bad guys in our movies and video games. And
oh, books. Yeah.
And so.
And they're back,
especially,
baby.
Especially the history books.
Yeah. Well, they're back. Yeah. They were our bad guys for Red Dawn. And then we got rid of them as bad guys for the remake of Red Dawn because it was all about the post 9/11 Middle East bad guys. And now we're back on the Russians. So,
and like the people who made
Top Gun Maverick. Meanwhile, we're the bad guys.
The people who made Top Gun Maverick were like, thank God.
Yeah.
We made this movie 4 years ago and now everyone hates Russians again because we basically, even though we never said it,
never
we
said
made
it.
The bad guys Russian.
Yeah, they're just bad. But I do appreciate that they were just bad guys.
No, they're our enemies. Our enemies have done this. Our enemies have done that.
That'd be great if Tom, I almost said Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, like he's talking to John Hamm or whatever, and he's just like, we're going to blow up these Russians, but like his mouth says Russians, but then you hear a dub of Tom Cruise like, hey, the bad guys. Yeah, perfect. The villain, the scum and villainy.
What else? I'm looking at my notes.
The one thing that really stuck out to me about this, and I think is very clear from the opening of the film all the way through to the end, is that Tetris itself is the ultimate MacGuffin, because Tetris is a perfect game. It's perfect. And the one thing that every power play has, it like every the goal of every power player in this movie, the reason why they want the rights to handheld Tetris or the rights to console, computer Tetris, the reason why everybody needs a piece of Tetris in some type of way is because Tetris really is that good.
Yeah.
It's a perfect game. Every sequel that they've ever released have had fun little tweaks. But all of them are fun tweaks that are not as good as the original. The original Tetris is untouchable. There's just
even today,
like I play Tetris 99 all the time. I love it. It's not as good as just regular old Tetris. It's a perfect game.
Dude, I just got a PS5 recently.
Ooh.
I was just out of curiosity, doing a little window shopping, if you will, to the new PSVR 2, which just came out a few months ago. It's supposed to be like the best VR or the best iteration of VR that we currently have.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking through the PlayStation Store. They're like, oh, PSVR 2 games. This is our essential list of games we need for the PSVR 2. And so I was looking through them, and lo and behold, there's a Tetris variant for VR, and the first thing I thought about was Tetris would be pretty sick to play in VR.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing though. Like there are certain games that are no matter what new console comes out, there are certain games that will always make the jump to a new console, and Tetris is at the front of that line.
I wouldn't even say the front of the line, but like they are always there no matter what. They're lurking in always the background. There. Because you have like your Marios, your Zeldas, your Halos, like all the stuff that The Last of Us, God of War, like these are all exclusive to each console. But Tetris is, on every console now.
No matter what.
In a variety of different ways. But it's not like, it's one of those rare things where like you don't have to advertise for it ever. Because the new Mario, Halos, like all this stuff. Huge marketing campaigns. All Tetris has to do is just release something, and then someone's going to be like just surfing the store, and they'll be like, "Oh, Tetris! I'll check the new Tetris out." Like it's just ingrained in their, or anybody who grew up with any kind of gaming exposure, it's like ingrained in their DNA.
So that's a question that I have. Is I think part of why Tetris is so ingrained is one because, as I said, it is a perfect game. But two, I think it's because of precisely the work that we see Hank doing in this movie. You know why I played Tetris? It came with my Game Boy. That's why. And it was always there. And every new Game Boy I got a Game Boy Pocket, I got a Game Boy Advance. The one cartridge that always came with me was Tetris because it was just old reliable no matter what. And so despite being a good game, it's kind of remarkable that Hank Rogers's fight to get the handheld rights to Tetris changed the face of popular culture in such a way that Tetris is a mainstay. And I really do think it's that packaging deal that gave it what it was.
I definitely agree with that. It's also like definitely one of the first games that was like what I call a session game, where, you know, there's no big story, there's no big sweeping arc, there's no real time investment other than
the blocks keep coming.
I want to sit down and solve this until I can't, and then move on. Like, there would be, like, there's a game called Rocket League that I like to play because each match is only 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
And if I have, you know, if I get ready for something too early and I have like 25 minutes to spare, I'll sit down and play a couple matches of Rocket League just to pass the time. And Tetris is one of those games, probably the first of these games where you can just literally use it to distract yourself and go through time stasis or like a time dilation, because, you know, this is such an easily playable game. It keeps your, you know, your wits attuned. It's just a very good puzzler.
It's easy to grasp and hard to master.
Classic and timeless at the same time.
And no matter how good you get at it, it's still going to be a challenge. But it's never stressful. Only like
a handful of people have beaten it.
Yeah. I don't even know how to beat it. I guess it's just you get to a certain level and they run out of speed advancements. But
there is a way.
Here's the other thing about Tetris. Without Tetris, our whole... the whole structure of what apps are on phones is different. There is no Candy Crush without Tetris. You know, none of those idle gamers that we have as apps exist without Game Boy and Tetris.
One might argue just that remarkable. The iPhone itself wouldn't exist without the Game Boy.
Yeah, yeah. And that marriage of Game Boy to Tetris once again. Although one of the things I wrote down a line that I thought says everything about why Tetris is so enjoyable. So midway through the movie, Hank goes to, I think his name was Alexei, to Alexei's house, and he says, "Show me the original Tetris." And so Alexei pulls out the like a Commodore 64 style computer and the black and green screen and shows him the Tetris. And at this point in Tetris, you could only eliminate one line at a time. And Hank says, "Is there a way that if they stack, you could eliminate all of the lines at once?" And Alexei gets to rerouting the encryptions and hacking into the mainframe, and then lo and behold, they do it, and they're both playing, and there's such a joy that comes with your synapses firing when you knock multiple lines at once. Oh, yeah. And that's such a vast improvement. And then Alexei says something that speaks to why we play games. It speaks to the historical context of a buttoned up Russian society. The quote is, "Life is hard. We deserve our small celebrations."
Yeah.
And in a modern sense, we go, "Oh, that's why phones are addictive, is because they provide a constant stream of, you know, serotonin blasts. And so that can be a problem." But with Tetris, and that's why video games can be addictive. But like, Tetris truly understands the withhold release of build, build, build. Boom. Here's a little celebration. Great work. Keep going. And I think that's what's so compelling about Tetris and what draws so many people to play it. And I think that's what really everybody in this movie is fighting over, is this machine that dispenses small celebrations in a world where small celebrations are not so common, or at least aren't expressed without some level of shame. And I just think that's so cool. I love that line because it said everything.
It's a great line, but what I was thinking during that scene was, how the fuck were they playing like that the entire time?
Yeah,
like, if you only get one line crossed off, if you hit a four and only one line gets cut out, then you have three solid blocks that you just can't get through.
I guess the challenge in that version of the game would be that you have to clear lines fast. Because, like, okay, so Tetris 99, it's beneficial not to let it build up and to just clear lines as fast as possible, because that's the nature of the game. And so I imagine that's probably what Tetris was like before the multi-line drop. Because when you're playing, you know, not online, not in Tetris 99, there's a strategy element where you can build a lot of stuff up and hold on to that, waiting for the one long brick to fall, and then you clear them all out and you get what is called within the game a Tetris. So I think that was just a moment of them like taking an almost perfect game and going, this is what makes it perfect. Now, whether in the real world story, whether that was a Hank development or an Alexei development, I don't know. That feels like a very Hollywoodized moment for a movie. Yeah. That said, I do like that it captures that when you're developing a game like this, those are the trials that you have to go through in order to get it there. You know, you have to get to a point where someone goes, you know, it would be a better Small Celebration? 4 lines. You know, and I appreciate that that was there because I don't know anything about programming a game. And that was a moment that really brought more understanding on my part to the idea of like how a game is not necessarily like you have to build a game from the ground up and then slowly develop once you have that shell. Yeah. And, you know, that's and the Tetris shell in that moment, at least in the movie, I think was perfected.
Yeah. Back to your point about Hank's character as a character himself, I totally forgot that he could code.
Yeah.
Until he got into the room with the Nintendo lab. I won't call them scientists. The Nintendo developed the engineers that were building the Game Boys. And he's like, I'll load the entire game super quick and make it this ratio.
But I love when he's like, so is this in Blabadooba G? And the guy's like, no, it's in Blabadooba C. And he's like, ah, perfect. I'm like, yes. I'm like, ah, good thing it's in C. Go.
Yeah. But the entire time I was like, I don't know how they, because like, it's so crazy how that one minor change changes the game completely from like strategy to execution, just complete 180 that one little thing makes.
And I think that's like, it's a testament. You'll see that in, you know, like a game will get a sequel and the sequel will figure out one little thing and you go, oh, it's so much better. It's so much smoother with this. But then there's other times where they try to tweak something and you go, that was a mistake. You fucked up an essential part of this. But another line from the movie is that good ideas have no borders. So I just wanted to say that out loud.
That was a little bit heavy handed for me.
I don't think anyone actually said that.
Oh,
that's it was in the movie. I don't think anyone said that in real life.
There was one line where I was like,
yeah. You're like, that was for the trailer.
The twist also got me.
Yeah, you know it's crazy, and we can spoil. We're about to take a break anyway. Yeah. The twist of the translator being a plant. I should have seen that coming from a mile away.
Miles away. We should have both seen that coming from a long way away.
Why the person that the Russian government hires to follow you around isn't a Russian government plant? Like, duh. But she was very pretty, though. I liked her.
Yeah.
She was a good character.
She was a great character.
Great character. But we should take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk some more about the filmmaking.
Yeah, sure.
So we'll be back after this commercial.
Sure.
Duh.
Hey everybody, it's me, Dan. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if the ads on the podcast are actually working because I don't think we have enough listeners to be able to activate ads. Now, this is partially my fault because of the time that I took off from doing Movie, but that doesn't mean I can't record an ad for the podcast itself, which is what you are listening to right now. So, make sure you follow I Like to Movie at MovieMovieCast on all of the things. Please subscribe. Please tell your friends. It would be very helpful if you could subscribe specifically on Spotify. That really beefs up the numbers. If you heard a little bell jingling, that's my cat's collar because she came running over because she can't let me record a fucking commercial in peace. Hi, Doris. Hi, Stinky. But please do all of that and check out our other show, Hot Property, at Hot Property Pod on all of the things. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll get you back to the show. We are part of the Hot Property Podcast Network. Peace.
So the director of Tetris is John S. Baird. And I was looking at his filmography, and I've actually only ever seen one of his other movies, which was Filth, the James McAvoy police sort of thriller that's based on the book by Irvine Welsh, who did Trainspotting. And it's quite a different style of movie than this one. And I'm very curious as to why Baird. But then again, he also did Stan and Ollie, which is the Laurel and Hardy biopic, which I've heard is pretty good, but I have not seen. I guess that's sort of a wheelhouse with Tetris because it is a real world history, whereas Filth is more of a just it's a Scottish filth movie like Trainspotting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if this was necessarily a passion project or if it was just a director for hire, but I think that whatever it was, as we talked about previously, I think the direction on this was actually pretty on point.
It turned out great. Good job, dude.
Good job, Bear JSB. I do think that one of the downsides of the era of streaming and of everything being shot digitally is that cinematographers have really had to step up their game in order to make things look dynamic because oftentimes they look a little flat.
Yeah. Because
everything's shot in a certain way and lit a certain way. You know, you have your exceptions, like It Follows was shot digitally, but that looks fantastic. The cinematographer did such a damn good job with that. I thought that it's an Apple TV movie, sorry, Tetris. I thought that Tetris...
Made a movie about Steve Jobs?
That'd be
great. Yeah.
But hey, that's another movie that this reminded me of was Steve Jobs, where it's a somewhat recent modern history story playing out like a fast-talking drama, yeah. Which was directed by Danny Boyle, who did Trainspotting. So maybe that's the connection. Those fucking Scots doing a great job talking about
Adam Scott, Scott Bakula,
friend Scott of the show, Lang. Scott Pagnotti, Scott Lang, fictional guy. So the cinematographer is Alwyn H. Kuechler. And he did.
This looks like a Kuechler.
This looks like a Kuechler. He did a Danny Boyle movie called Sunshine. He did The Mauritanian, which was decent. He did Divergent, which I have not seen.
Fucking Shailene Woodley.
Guess what else he did? Steve Jobs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I think
what was the name again? Schuster.
It's Kuechler. It's K U C H L E R, but the U has an umlaut. Over it.
Nice. Yep.
He did R.I.P.D. Hannah. I love that movie.
R.I.P.D. is an awesome movie.
Is it?
No.
No. It didn't look good.
When I saw RIPD, I wanted to say RIP me, if you know what I mean.
I went and visited home once, and my dad was like, check out what I DVR'd, and it was RIPD, and he put it on, and like 5 minutes into it, we were both like, we should watch literally anything else at all. But it actually
looks pretty sharp. And that movie got a sequel.
Did it?
Direct-to-streaming sequel.
RIIPD?
And they just RIPD too.
So can't all be winners. But I think that this movie at times does have that flat digital look that I don't like, but only in fits and starts. And for the most part, I was very impressed by the way it looked, especially because there was plenty of shots that showed late 80s, early 90s era Russia. And it was very clear, not clear to see, but clear to know that we were watching actors on a soundstage with a green screen behind them.
Yeah, and there was a lot of like shots where the car pulls up and like that's all the scenery
like,
take.
Like I know how that's done. Yeah. That said, if I didn't know how that was done, it's not a gaudy enough distinction between the real set and the digital set where it felt false to me. I think for the most part, they fleeced it in such a way that made it work. And then, as you were mentioning earlier, I really love the way that they integrated 8-bit visuals into it. Establishing shots, and actually that's kind of where I could see it the most. The establishing shots would be in 8-bit, and then the 8-bit would click away to the establishing shot, oftentimes which was digital as well. But very clever to do it that way, especially since the aesthetic of the 8-bit that they use doesn't actually match Tetris all that much.
No.
And the 8-bit sort of, instead of speaking to the visuals of Tetris, end up speaking more to an era in time. And I thought that that 8-bit visualization did a really good job of putting an American recognized time period onto a movie that only ever takes place in Russia and Japan.
Yeah. And I think that also, the flatness may have been a creative choice, especially in the scenes in Russia, That way it kind of gives the air of a cold, desolate place as it is stereotyped to be from our American point of view, but also to make those 8-bit visuals pop.
And I think it also it does speak to the like that flatness does sort of depict this idea of like Russia is this huge country and a person standing within it still only exists in a tiny little box. You know, there's something weirdly claustrophobic about it, despite it being a vast tundra of space. It's I think you might be right that some of that was intentional.
I
I
like
think.
my favorite scene with the with that kind of hopelessness motif, the on the pedestrian bridge, where they're kicking Alexei out of his apartment, and the main antagonist has like his two kids teaching them a lesson about gravity and how everything falls at the same rate. And it was very like Hans Landa-esque.
Well, I like it because it's Hans Landa-esque because it's he's being nice to the kids and saying something mean and scary to the parents. But I also had to laugh because it was like he is speaking in terms of Tetris. Because that is a whole game about watching where things fall and
I
making
didn't even
sure
put
that
that
they fall.
together.
And I honestly, until this moment, I did not either. But yeah, making sure things fall exactly as they should. And man, what a fucking dick.
But
Hans Landa would have been right at home in Russia.
that's also a testament to the direction, because it was like it wasn't out of the realm of possibility for me to think that this dude's about to throw a kid over a fucking bridge. And like, so there was definitely like, there was no point where I was like, this definitely won't happen. Like, I was seriously considering, are they going to do this the entire time?
I actually felt watching this that the Russians were a little bit more lenient and forgiving relative to what I assumed about them. Like, I just always assumed, at least especially in this era, that have been like, we don't like this guy, kill him, take the paperwork.
Why didn't they just throw him in jail like they threatened him to?
Yeah, and like it felt like they were giving a lot of second chances that I didn't, but maybe that speaks to since their society was in flux at that point and they were about to make the switch from communism to capitalism, which,
Spoiler alert.
yeah. Well, there was Gorbachev had a really interesting line, and as somebody who is quite politically cynical, it spoke to something that I believe. And the line I wrote down when Maxwell, when big, heavy Maxwell man goes in and says, "You need to do this because we're friends. That's what it is, Gorby. You and me are friends." And Gorby says, "Communism was never meant to prevent freedom, but unfortunately, human greed got in the way." And that line speaks volumes because right now there's discussions of the push-pull between capitalism and communism in America. And, both systems have their merits and demerits. But when they fail, it really does come down to human greed. That's the hole in the armor for all of this. And I thought that line was remarkable because, like, I've never been a person who believes in, capitalism or communism being wholesale good or bad. But it's also just because I have really big trust issues. I don't trust people. And that's why, because greed really does manifest. And that line really stuck to me because the one thing that everybody accuses Hank of is being greedy. And then ultimately, by the end of the movie, he is the one who exhibits the least amount of greed. Like, yes, he wants to be successful in getting certain rights to Tetris. But it becomes ultimately clear that the reason he wants to be successful is because he believes in taking that wealth and putting it towards his family and his friends and his community and building businesses of his own. Whereas everyone else seems to have this, like, we want money, we want greed, we want power. His idea of obtaining Tetris is more one of, if I obtain this power, I can use it to facilitate freedom. And I think that's so remarkable that
A
his
testament,
character kept it alive.
another testament to just the way the movie was presented is that it took me as an audience member a while to trust him as well.
I genuinely thought that his downfall was going to be some selfishness Like when they tried to blackmail him by having the translator put the moves on him.
Yeah.
I thought that that was going to move forward. And I thought that there was going to be a big scene where his wife confronts him and he loses his family. But to my surprise and to my relief, he's like, no, I'm married. We can't have this. And he is devoted to his wife. He is devoted to his family in such a way. And I was very pleased to see that he didn't have the same downfall as so many characters in his position would.
Yeah.
I don't know the full true story. I would love to read whatever book this is based on, if it's based on a book.
It's based off of this video game called Tetris.
Yes. Ah, yes.
Yes.
Hank's not in that.
No, I told you he's the square block.
Oh, yeah. Correct. Actually, yeah, and the
that's
writer.
That's why he was played by Taron Egerton.
You son of a bitch. That's what I'm talking about. That was a moment of human greed.
Yeah, you're right.
You wanted that so bad. No, it actually, it doesn't appear to be based on anything. It was just written by Noah Pink, who did Tetris, Genius, The Show, Zed Crew, a bunch of stuff I never heard of.
And he played Mr. Pink in Reservoir Dogs.
You're confusing him with Steve Buscemi, which I can understand because of the whole Pink thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, I really liked that his character ended up being altruistic. And I also found it remarkably sweet how he ultimately tried to make it right with his daughter for missing the performance by building her a little stage. I found that to be supremely moving. And I also liked the way it was characterized was not of a, this makes it okay that I didn't show up to your recital, but it shows like, I want to do the work to make it okay. Like it's not a one-to-one trade, but it's a really good moment of I fucked up, and it's really sweet. And also I just like credit to the actresses that played his family. Oh, he also an actor, cause he also had a son, but really it was like the wife and the one daughter were the main points of his family. For characters that had every excuse to be supporting characters that are just sidelined, I think that they actually felt pretty well fleshed out despite not having a lot of screen time. And I appreciated that they weren't just motivational points for him. Like they actually had, you know, they weren't just plot dressing. They actually seemed to have some sort of a characterization, which is not always the case.
I was surprised to see how many kids he had.
Yeah.
For somebody who's like really like flying by the seat of his pants financially.
Yeah.
But then I thought about, I was like, you know what? If I had a wife as beautiful as she was, I would want to bless the world with more of her.
Oh, yeah. Also, too, if I'm being honest, I know a lot of people who have kids that financially absolutely should not have. In fact, no. I would say that most people that I know my age that have kids really are just flying by the seat of their pants to keep that whole situation financially solvent. And God bless them for doing it. But it's not uncommon, I don't think, for someone to just keep on laying that pipe.
Also, that apartment looked so small for a family of five.
Yeah. Although that was Tokyo, and as I understand it, architecture in Tokyo,
there's not a lot of room there.
Yeah, it's pretty packed in tight.
Yeah. Standing room only in Tokyo.
Yeah. I the one bit that made me laugh every time, especially when Hank called it out, is anytime he was in the government building in Russia and he would, you know, put forth a deal or put forth an idea, the people he's talking to would just go, and then they'd leave the room to go to a separate room to do the thing. And eventually at one point he calls them out and he's just like, you guys are really good at, you know, just doing that. You got to give me something. And when I tell you, I like chortled when he said that, because
he said you're the king of cliffhangers.
King of cliffhangers, because every time it happened up until then, I was like, I would be so pissed right now if I was in this meeting. Like, that's too many sidebars. Way too many sidebars.
Way too many.
Oh, that would piss me the fuck off.
Do you want to do our countdown?
I want to go through my notes real fast to make sure I didn't miss anything. Yeah, Tetris really is that good. One thing that I really liked is they mentioned how at that time, Europeans and Russians really, really coveted jeans.
Oh, yeah, the Levi's.
Levi's, that is like something that I remember when I was in elementary school, we had somebody who was just like from somewhere in Europe, I don't remember, who just came in to talk to the class about, you know, how, what the different cultures are like. Obviously, I didn't retain the important stuff, but the
I'm laughing at something else. I'll tell you in a second.
Okay. The one thing that he said that always stuck with me, though, he said that anytime he traveled to the States, he had a long list of people who asked him to bring jeans back for them because jeans, like good denim overseas, would cost like $500. You okay there?
I just imagine when you were telling that story, I just imagine like, yeah. And so he would come and he would present in class sometimes. And then all of a sudden he would just like in the middle of a sentence be like, oh my God.
Are those jeans?
Are those Levi's?
What's funny though is when I was a kid, I did not wear jeans. According to my mom, I told her they were too crunchy. So I was a sweatpants kid.
I forgot what I wore. I think I wore a lot of like khakis in school.
It's no wonder growing up, both my parents and my doctors thought I was autistic, but my parents thought it was too much work to get me diagnosed, so they never did. So I don't know. I could be. I have a note of one of my favorite lines in the movie because I love arch villainy. And Maxwell yells at one point, "Just get me Tetris!" So good.
He goes full J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, just get me Tetris. I want those blocks falling on my screens.
Yeah.
We have to talk right towards the end there, just suddenly spring us with the best car chase I've seen in ages.
Oh my God, dude. That's better than anything I've seen in Fast and Furious.
Been a couple movies decade. Since they did something. Yeah. Really well done. A good mix of actual cars and scenes that seem to be entirely digital if you're looking closely. But with a car chase, it's as much about the visuals of the cars as it is about maintaining a narrative within the car. And that's where it was most impressive to me. The way that they all spoke to one another in the car as it was happening, cutting back and forth between the denizens of each car.
Yeah.
Very well done. And very exciting, very humorous. And it all leads up to a really great moment where they're at the airport and they got to beat the clock. And, you know, they're going to beat the clock. And Hank turns around to hug Alexi and he says, "It is no time for American emotion."
Yeah.
Which they pay off later. Like, hey, you want to have some American emotion now right before they blow each other?
Do you want to fuck?
You want to fuck? But you mentioned this earlier. I love how anytime the cars collided, the damage was done in 8-bit style.
Yeah.
Which gave it maintained the urgency of the chase without turning this into a car chase movie.
Yeah.
Like it kept it within the tone of the movie. Like if you're going to go into a car chase, you either got to go whole hog and vanishing point that shit, or, you know, you have to kind of pump the brakes on it. And they did neither and found a way to do it. But I do have one bugaboo with the movie. They pulled something at the end, and it's something that they do in movies that I don't care for because I think it's cheap. And it's when Hank and the guy from Andor and the other guy are his one boss is on Andor, and he was also on a BBC show called Coupling that I love. They get on the plane. And the movie frames it as if the Russians are right on their heels and are about to get on the plane. And then the Russians do get on the plane. And I'm like, God damn it. They're going to get caught. And then it's revealed after the fact that they got on a different plane and the editing was just lying to us. I don't like when movies do that.
That's also the second time they did that.
When was the other time?
And when they're in the club and the guys are going into the club, but they're really going into Hank's apartment.
That I didn't mind because it felt a little less like a sneak. I think that they let on what was going on a little bit earlier on the reveal. Whereas this one, it was down to those guys actually marching up and down the plane before they let on that they're on a completely different plane.
Yeah.
And like Argo pulled one of those at the end of, and I like Argo quite a bit, but like I just movies.
Ocean's 11 did it.
Ocean's 11 did it as a stylized choice for humor. which I think is Ghostbusters did it. Fuck. A-Team did it. No, but when Ocean's 11 did it, they did it in a different way because they not only paired, like, when they're explaining the heist, they actually show you the heist as they're explaining how they're going to do it. Yeah. So that was kind of all cooked into the format at that point. And it was less a way to build tension in us and more of a way to have a clever gotcha to the bad guy.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it was meant to essentially lie to us and have us go, God damn it, they didn't get away. And then them just being like, oops, wrong plane. And whether that happened or not is irrelevant. I think that there's a better way to do that. And I think that that's cheap. And as much as I really loved this movie, I always try to make it a rule to come up with one thing I don't like about every movie I love. That's it right there. Because something about that just rubs me the wrong way. To me, I wouldn't have had it get all the way to the plane. I would have milked the tension in the airport and then had the scene end with them finally shutting the door and pulling away and have those guys like running down the, running down the skyway and being like, ah, we just missed them. To have them actually get on the plane and do that, I don't know. That's just a weird shuffle edit that I just think is like dramatically inert. It undercuts its own drama for a needless gimmick, but that's me.
I like gimmicks.
I like gimmicks too. This one's just not one of my favorites. This is up there with just like, it was a dream. Okay, move on.
Well, agree to disagree.
So, I mean, you dug that edit choice?
I liked it, yeah. That was fine.
It always feels like underhanded to me. That said, but up to the point where they
underhand
do,
is the easiest ball to catch, Dan.
It's true, and that's probably my issue with it. But like, well said. But up until the point where they do that reveal, I think the tension was maintained quite well. I just feel like that reveal then retroactively makes me go, you just wasted like 5 minutes of my time. But
the car chase scene is worth 10 minutes.
The car chase scene was unbelievable. It's one of the best. Like, I did not expect that at all. And then it comes through and just, lo and behold, great car chase in the middle of a non-car chase movie. Also, I would like to do some more research on the death of the elder Maxwell. Because in the postscript, they talk about how he died in disgrace with tons of debt, but also that he died under mysterious circumstances.
Yeah.
And so is this one of those things where he died and they couldn't tell, what the mechanism of his death was? Or was it just like, hey, it was probably poisoned, but everyone wanted to poison him? Like, I would like to know more. But I guess that's just a different movie entirely. But any final thoughts?
It's probably a 2020 special.
Yeah, I'm going to look it up. I'm going to do some research on it because we'll check back in the future.
Yeah, I tried to just look up anything, but nothing came up. So
I couldn't find anything this weekend, but I'll dig around. I'll call my guys at CNN and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I got Anderson on call.
Yeah, but not Tucker. He's fired from Fox.
Nope. Good riddance. And Aaron Rodgers goes to the Jets. This whole world is different now.
But I don't even know what's up is down. It's crazy. Yeah. Any final thoughts before we go to our lists that you're in a rush to get to?
No, I'm not in a rush to get to them.
I'm just playing. any final thoughts on the movie?
No, I'm good. I loved it.
Yeah, right on. Me too. I'm a big Taron
Egerton fan. Best movie I've ever fucking seen in my life.
Hell yeah, that's the ticket. Yeah. Taron Egerton is like, he's truly great. And ever since Rocket Man, he's just been on like, if he's in it, it can't be all bad. And yeah. I think he's going to, I mean, I think he's already done great stuff.
He's out there burning out his fuel alone.
Yeah, that's right. And he's, I think that he is going to do like the Oscar that he should have gotten for Rocket Man is on its way. Don't worry.
Not for this one, but
he's going to continue putting out increasingly great material because I think he is a committed and talented and obviously hardworking actor who seems to be in it for the craft much more than in it for the honor. And I respect that about him. I think he's damn good.
And hopefully he doesn't die an early untoward death.
Well, that's one way to get an Oscar.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's count them down. So the rules were, top five video top five movies based on, about, or inspired by video games.
I think I went last time.
All right, I will start. I will start with this one. Involves video games. I think it's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. It is such an enjoyable, uncommonly pleasing movie. I'm a big fan of Grandma's Boy.
That's my number four.
Oh, right on. Yes. All right. Yeah, Grandma's Boy, because they are video game programmers and video game testers. And then it also turns out to be like a really great stoner comedy, endlessly quotable. It's the one Happy Madison movie that doesn't have Adam Sandler. And it's one of my more favorite Happy Madison productions. What a unique thing that when it came out, everyone was like, that looks stupid. What's that? The Benchwarmers? And then everyone saw it and was like, that was a fucking party. That's a funny movie. Like, it was like a surprise hit, like Super Troopers was.
When the monkey started driving, I knew this was a hit.
Yeah. Dude, there's a fucking lion out. That guy's the best.
Dude, that I gotta rewatch that movie because that is I mean, I'm taking a hiatus from drinking, and so I'm just smoking pot now.
It's a great stoner
and
movie.
So, and now this is like, now talking about it, I want to put it on. I want to stop the podcast where we are right now and watch that movie.
Well, it's like 80 minutes long, so you can do it tonight.
Yeah, I know, right?
My favorite part in that, not my favorite part, but like the one line that I still quote is anytime I'm beating someone's ass in any sort of video game, I always quote Nick Swartz and I go, high score. What does that mean? Did I break it? It's so good. Best shit talk.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll do number four because that was your number four.
No, mine. Well, I didn't do number five yet.
Okay.
My number five is Mortal Kombat from 2021.
It was a cool movie.
It was a fucking fun time.
Yeah. That was the action, first.
The action was great. The story was digestible.
Yeah. It looked good. Goro looked awesome.
Yeah. I had a great time watching it.
That was one of the first movies that I went to a press screening for after, like, as COVID was sort of winding down the lockdowns. And it was funny because there was only a couple people there, but we were all just wearing hoodies and masks. So I was like, we're all fucking accidentally cosplaying a scorpion right now. This is badass. Yeah, that's one of those movies that I think was pretty good, but sets up what should be a fucking killer sequel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's still in development, I think.
Good. I hope so, because I would love to see more. Yeah, that was fun. I dig Mortal Kombat. I'm glad you went with the new one and not the old one as much as I love the old one. All right, my number four is the David Cronenberg movie Existenz.
I saw that, and I thought that was a brand of dick pills you get at the gas station.
It really does sound like that, yeah. Extends, I believe, is what you're referring to. But yeah, Existenz is Jennifer Jason Leigh,
that
Jude
gives
Law.
You a mind boner.
Yes, actually, that is an appropriate thing because David Cronenberg is very big into psychosexual kind of stuff as well as bionics. And so this is a video game movie where they have like flesh controllers. And it's sort of a riff on something like Videodrome, except instead of television, it's video games. It ends up being like a spy movie slash Matrix-y kind of thing. Definitely got to be your type of movie to enjoy it.
Oh yeah,
I like Cronenberg, so it's my type of movie. But and I like those two stars. But Existenz is David Cronenberg trying to reconcile the idea of connecting flesh to technology via handheld controllers, a la video games.
I'm
and
in.
It's pretty interesting. You might like it. I think you might. It's weird. It's crazy, and like you do have to like finger the controller like a pussy. It's wild.
I'm in for the attack, like put electronics on my body and like make me into a cyborg.
Well, Elon Musk is going to do that Neuralink.
I've been on the email list for years.
I will not be an early adopter of Neuralink. I'm going to wait until they knock out all of the kinks. I'm going to wait till like eighth generation.
Sign me up. There's one.
Right on. You're gonna be a Manchurian candidate. They're gonna activate your chip and you're gonna start killing politicians.
Sounds great.
Yeah, honestly, I'm into it.
Yeah.
All right.
My number three is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Nice.
Not necessarily after a video game, it's actually after a comic book, but they didn't make a video game about it, which is pretty good.
It's also and very video game adjacent.
It's very, yeah, it's good enough, in my opinion, to make this list. And we all know why. We've all seen it. We all love it. It's a classic. And they're making a series, an animated series I'm really excited about too, with all the original cast. Fuck yeah, dude.
Can't wait. I bought the 4K disc of that because they remastered it in 4K and it is gorgeous. Oh, it's unbelievable.
I would love to see that one in 4K with all the colors.
It's gorgeous. Well, we'll set it up.
It's got every color in there. It's got all the, it stars all the colors.
All the colors. Noah Pink, writer of Tetris. What are we at? Oh, my number three. My number three is the Denzel Washington, Russell Crowe classic, Virtuosity, in which Russell Crowe plays a digital amalgamation of every serial killer that ever lived that somehow escapes the video game and becomes a real world entity. And cool LA cop Denzel Washington has to kill this unkillable super killer in the form of Russell Crowe. Big old
what year
dumb.
Is this?
It's like 1992 or something. It
sounds
like
92.
It's before Russell Crowe was a name. It's just like, you know, and it's got Denzel Washington being like, game over. It's not the greatest movie, but it's of an era and it's really a lot of fun. And you get to watch Russell Crowe like go big. Like there's a scene where he like attacks a nightclub full of people and he records all of their screams. And then as a way to torture them is a DJ like remixing their screams into horrifying music. It's insane. But because he's made entirely of silicone, if you shoot him, he might have holes in him, but if he touches glass, he can absorb that glass back into his body. He was like designed so that cops can study serial killers, but then of course he escapes the program. It's so stupid. It's brilliant. I love it. Virtuosity.
My number two is Tetris.
Right on.
Yeah. It was that good. It made my list immediately. I had a great time watching it.
I probably would have put it on my list if we didn't do a whole movie about it because I liked it a lot.
My honorable mention, I'll use this slot to talk about since we just talked about Tetris, is The Wizard, which was a Nintendo ad starring Fred Savage.
Yeah,
they introduced Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yep, at the big contest for Super Mario Brothers 3. Yep. I remember watching that movie as a kid and being like, I don't know, that game looks pretty easy. When they're all playing it in the competition, I was like, eh. All right, my number two is the Gerard Butler classic, Gamer.
I love Gamer.
Gamer rules.
It almost made my list, but not didn't quite make it.
Gamer, where prisoners are put into a human avatar sort of game, where I can rent space inside them and play. It's real world, but it's sort of video game. But that movie is notable for Gerard Butler drinking a bottle of vodka and then peeing it into the tank of a car, creating ethanol so that he can start the car. Doesn't make sense at all. Love it.
Amazing.
Terry Crews, I got no strings to hold me down. Fucking great. Dexter's the bad guy. Love it.
My number one is, of course, the best video game and best Daft Punk music video, Tron Legacy.
Yo. I don't like Tron that much.
No, but Tron sucks.
I love Tron Legacy.
Tron Legacy is the best video game movie.
That was your first 3D movie. Fun.
Yeah, it was my first 3D movie, and I was really stoned. And I remember the THX thing like came up.
The countdown.
And I was like, whoa.
Because I remember we sat down and you were like, I don't know, man. This is like, these glasses are stupid. And then it counted down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You're like, ah! And I was like, this isn't the movie. You're like, what? And then I remember we went back to my apartment afterwards and we took the lids off of the cheese ball barrels and threw them around the apartment to play Tron.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. We did. Because
that's what you do.
Yes, we did. Wow.
While
we had children.
While yelling, Tron!
Was that your number one too?
No, my number one is a documentary that you would love. It's called The
Way
King
to Bring the Fucking Mood Down.
Oh, dude, The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters.
I haven't seen that one.
It's about two guys competing to be the best Donkey Kong arcade player, and it's filled with intrigue and double crosses and very high tension. And the two dudes competing are such characters, and like one of them is like kind of expressly villainous, while the other one's like a family man. Yeah. So it's just it's really put together well. But yeah, I mean, there's not much to say about it, but if you want to fall down a wiki hole of just crazy information, watch that movie and then research the character Billy, because he's something else. But, yeah, the King of Kong is my number one. All right. There you have it, everybody. Yeah. Thank you again for listening to I Like to Movie. Tetris is available on Apple Plus, so definitely check that out. And of course, you can get I Like to Movie everywhere you get your podcasts, at MovieMovieCast on Instagram and on Twitter. Our other show, Hot Property, at Hot Property Pod on all the things. And you can check out my website, scullyvision.com. What do you got for us, Steven?
Nothing.
And that's been Movie.
Bye.
Bye.